I agree that a camp has to be registered to fall under section 17. If a government agency orders a camp to be vacated because the camp is not habitable, that's just any camp. Now, if you want to just order a camp to be vacated and scratch because the camp is not habitable, just for any reason the people have to move out, they've got to be put elsewhere.
Senator Cairns, I was going to suggest that if a camp is habitable, and if there's some other reason like non-registration that the person is in violation of law, more likely than not, the remedy is going to be severe and staff fines and an order to register and not closure of the camp. So we may be talking about a fairly rare.
No, I think Minister Dale is correct. We wouldn't want to close a camp if it's habitable, even though it's not registered and therefore doesn't meet the test of the statute.
Oh, but wait a minute.
We have to have some way to respond.
Wait a minute. You couldn't declare it not habitable by virtue of the fact it's not registered.
I think
is that possible or is that stretching?
I think that's stretching.
Oh, everybody says that's stretching. Okay.
That's stretching.
We'll leave that camp with its occupants.
It may not.
It's
wouldn't
habitable,
be,
but it ain't registered.
No, it wouldn't be good public policy to throw farm workers out of a camp that's habitable.
Yeah.
Assuming there's always going to be a shortage of farm worker housing, but which otherwise doesn't meet the test. The solution is to cause the camp to become registered and come into compliance.
But if you find me and I've got a place that's not registered and it's habitable, that is to say it meets the building health and safety standards, I got 50 guys in there and I'm not registered, and you come along and find me, you're going to say, okay, now you go register, and then I go to register and you say, you're a bad character because you were running this unregistered thing over here and you can't get registered, at which point we then close the camp.
There needs to be some process to try to get it to be registered.
Yeah. Okay.
But if the owner of any camp made the decision not to register the camp, not to be in compliance with the law, they're effectively making a decision to close the camp. If they decide not to operate in compliance with the law. But most operators, if the camp meets health and safety standards, probably choose to meet the registration and operation requirements of the law.
Right, moving right along. Thank you.
Okay, so we address that through the penalty provisions and the registration requirements.
Yeah, the point of this is to make it clear that we want these camps to be habitable. If they're not, you're going to have to provide another place to live.
Right. That's all we want to do there. Thank you.
If I may address the second part of that provision, which says that the Bureau shall enforce provisions of Section 1, I'm not sure that any language change is necessary. I'm wondering whether that was intended to be the exclusive means of enforcing. What I'm particularly interested in is there is a private right of action provided at the end of this bill to enforce the provisions of the Act. And I've got a question of the proponent of this amendment, and I'm not quite sure who that was, but is the intent to provide in the Bureau the exclusive means of enforcement of the requirement to provide extra housing? Or could a worker, pursuant to the private right of action, attempt to recover the costs?
Where is the private right of action provision?
The private right of action provision is in Section 18, Sub 2.
Senator Cairns, I can add as a preface to sub 2 of section 17, in addition to other remedies provided by law, the Bureau shall enforce the provisions of sub 1 of
this
section.
Thank you. That does it.
Now, state that again.
In addition to other remedies provided by law.
Okay.
The Bureau shall enforce.
I have one more comment on this section, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
In addition, I think that's a good amendment. I'd like
10 minutes to finish this bill. So
okay, this is an easy one.
Move it or lose it here.
Okay,
in 10 minutes.
The camp operator shall provide lodging that meets the health and safety standards of the division for 10 days or until the camp is made habitable, whichever is left, comma, on the same terms that were previously on which it was previously made available. In other words, if the farm labor contractor is operating in camp out of compliance with health and safety standards, it's shut down. They provide a travel lodge and then charge the employees for travel lodge lodging. That would not be on the same terms. If they were charging the employee $20 a month before, they could charge them $20 a month after, $50 a month before, $50 a month after, nothing before, nothing after. So the employees are held harmless in this regard.
How about, I think the intent of the section is he shall provide it without charge.
Yeah, shall provide the lodging. He's
going to steer these people into
a
filthy camp, but he's got to give them free lodging.
Okay.
He
gives them free lodging.
Shall without charge provide lodging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we mean that to mean shall provide the lodging free.
Without charge. Well, then we should put without charge.
Without charge provide lodging that meets the health limit. Okay, got it. Thank you. Next.
I have something in section 18 sub 2, which
that's where we're next.
Is that where we should be now?
Yep.
There was no change made there, but
yeah,
I realized that was something you were.
Yeah, this is where we have that open standing. Commissioner, director, or any other person may bring suit. Now that makes it really open to.
That's all those authorized persons coming onto the property.
Those instrumentalists we're talking about. So
yes,
how about
authorized individuals?
Well, I was going to say the commissioner, director, local agency, or any other aggrieved person. And aggrieved has a certain meaning in law that the court can deal with. It means that you've got some reasonable grounds to complain. You're not just in there making a nuisance of yourself or because that happens to be your particular zealotry.
Or vigilantism. We want to avoid authorized in vigilantism.
No, Mr. Chairman, I take the radical wing on this one.
You like
I think
any
I'm
other
outvoted.
Person? I think you're outvoted.
I think I'm probably.
We're going to delete or any other person and insert the commissioner, the director,
local agency,
any local agency,
or any aggrieved person.
Okay.
I don't think we need the word other because those people are not exactly aggrieved.
Okay.
And
then down in line 18, I think there's we need another word. It should say may bring suit to enjoin any person from violating any of the provisions of this act or rules adopted thereto and from committing future violations.
And from committing, that's correct.
Do we need to speak, Ms. Chairman, in Section 18 to the type of damages, or should we just leave it?
We understand what those damages are.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Section.
All right.
Section 19 was inserted to ensure that the commissioner could not revoke, suspend, or refuse to renew or reissue an endorsement or registration pursuant to any rules or authority that APD had unless APD had already determined that the operator had failed to comply with those rules so that Foley wouldn't be enforcing APD's rules.
Good. Good.
They seem to like that one.
I'll bet everybody loved that one. Okay.
Okay.
Now we have, that's all existing law. We go over here to, and that's it. Is that right?
So just a second.
I have one more thing to add.
What's that?
At the tail end someplace there. Mm-hmm. Probably section, new section 21. And that will be, there's currently a provision that Boley shall, or may make inspections to determine if there appears to be lack of compliance with health and safety standards and shall report any apparent violations to APD. There's nothing comparable for APD to report to Boley. Now, APD's trotting around out in the field there and finds an unregistered camp. I want APD to report that to Boley. If APD is out there and sees reasonable evidence that there's an unlicensed farm labor contractor, for instance, one of the camp occupants reveals this. I'd like to have that, and that's a violation of statutes that Boley enforces. I'd like to have APD report that to Boley. I'd like to see a cooperative relationship go both ways. And that way we extend our ability to enforce the range of statutes that the two agencies enforce. So what I'd like to provide is a section that says APD, in pursuing its duties under Chapter 654, and comes into any understanding that there's a violation of Boley's chapter, shall inform Boley of that apparent violation for investigation or whatever. Something along that line.
Mr. Pompey.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hill, could not that be worked out in the interagency agreement, or do you want it in statute?
I'd like to have it in statute because of the experience of the two agencies slugging it out. They've got a responsibility to report to you, or they may report to you. I'd like to have the same language. You may report to them. And then you work out the details in interagency agreement.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hill, I really have no problem with that. If you do it under the predisposition that these are just quasi-cursory looks, because we're not...
We don't want you enforcing AP. Don't you dare.
But we're not professional. You know, we're not professionals, and we could perceive, and we'd be glad to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, under statute, which Boley does, you know, for us. But there's a lot difference between another agency giving us perceived violation and us going through the the legal ramifications of finding and citation.
Right.
So
right.
I'd be glad to do that if you... But okay. Our people aren't...
We could look at the statute that already exists for Boley and have parallel language for APD going the other direction. You do it? Then fine. This is absolutely consistent with what you do. You got no complaint.
All right. We'll do it. We'll add that. Thank you.
And then we'll work on language.
Good. Then they can work it out in the interagency agreement detailing who's going to call whom.
Mr. Chairman,
have you got a phone in that car?
Mr. Chairman, I refuse to answer on the Fifth Amendment. I take the Fifth.
Mr. Chairman, one last amendment is very, very simple. The interagency agreement agreed to should be brought back to the interim labor committees for review.
No. I think the interagency agreement ought to be sent by registered return receipt requested mail to the senator from Springfield. Okay, do we understand that that's going to occur? And you're going to send it to him, and if he doesn't get it, I'm going to hear about it. And whoever's chair of the Interim Labor Committee is going to hear about it. Is that correct? Heads are nodding yes. Correct. Is that okay?
Well, I
prefer... It's just one more thing we'd have to chase through the statutes. And
well,
I think,
you know,
we can trust him.
Mr. Chairman, you know how agreements are elusive sometimes. They slip out of your fingers just when you're ready to grab them. This just want to help the grip there a little bit. I'll defer to the wishes of the chair.
Yeah, thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shoemaker.
By reading along here, I find in Section 20, Sub 3, on the final page, where we're talking about filing or reporting this penalty, which has become a judgment. The language ought to be made consistent with that series of amendments that I suggested.
Okay. Is that understood?
Sounds fine.
Wait a sec. Sorry.
That's OR 654086 being further amended to make it parallel with the other.
What page?
In other words, page 13 between lines 8 and 17, be sure that the language is consistent with Section 10, Sub 2 on page 9.
Okay.
Okay. Got that, Ms. Hannah? All right. We'll do it. Now, we got 2 minutes to spare here. That's great. Senator Hill moves the
amendments
dash 5 amendments as further amended by the committee on this date. Is there objection to the adoption of the amendment? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Senator Hill moves. Where's this to the llama going?
This
going to judiciary. Why is it going to judiciary?
Because I think originally it had criminal penalties in there. We don't have criminal penalties in there.
Do we take criminals out of there?
Nope.
Where
we
are
didn't
they?
Take criminals out of there?
Section 16.
We still got the felonies?
They're misdemeanors.
Misdemeanors.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Violation of Section 3 is a Class A misdemeanor. For goodness sakes, Mr. Chairman, this is not going to send people to prison. This is not going to impact prison over prison.
Well, that's why it's going there, isn't it? let the record note the judiciary, Senate Judiciary Committee is in possession of a humongous number of bills. And they've reported out only a mere handful.
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Let me take a look at Section 3. Okay, what are we putting a misdemeanor on?
What operating a farm worker camp unless you
unless you do all those things.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're a good guy. In Section 6.1 that you show, every farm worker camp operator shall register with the Bureau.
It's generally your endorsement requirement and your registration requirement.
Can't we get rid of that and then ask to say we took the criminals out and we left the civil penalties?
Mr. Chairman, this was requested by Oregon Legal Services, so we might want to come in.
Does Mr. Dale want to chase this bill up to the Judiciary Committee and see if he can get it extricated out of there?
Chairman Kearns, Mr. Dale does not want to chase it in Judiciary Committee. I'm consulted with other members of our coalition, and all are in agreement with the deletion of the criminal penalties.
Okay. What would that then leave us if we delete Section 16? What penalties would then remain for violation of Section 3 and Sub 1 of Section 6?
Civil fine penalties.
Penalties up to $2,000 and et cetera, et cetera, and so forth. Okay. Senator Hill moves the deletion of Section 16.
And renumbering it.
And renumbering. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move we pass the floor with the recommendation that the chamber revoke the subsequent referral to Judiciary Committee and favorably act on the bill.
Senator Hill moves that Senate Bill 732 is amended, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and request to the President that with the deletion of Section 16, the subsequent referral to the Committee on Judiciary shall be rescinded. You heard the motion. Is there comment? We're now 2 minutes past the hour. If not, then let's call the roll on the motion.
Senator
Gransky? No.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Chair Kearns?
Aye. The motion is adopted. Thank you. And council will work diligently to make sure that we've got it all squared. Now, we are going to take our dinner recess and return in exactly 57 minutes. And with luck, we should be able to finish that hearing up within an hour or so. So we will stand in recess.
I think it will. I think you need to work out a lot of details.
I don't have a problem with asking for an extension on the 3D.
I think we can get past.
We're at that point where you either move them or lose them. And if people want to talk to me, and that's entered in the record of the committee. Let's begin by calling Robert Cunning. Okay. Mr. Fleming, identify yourself for the record. Have at it.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Robert Fleming. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America. Vietnam Veterans of America is chartered by the United States Congress as a not-for-profit veteran service organization and is dedicated to improving the condition of veterans, their families, and survivors in this state and nation. The Oregon State Council represents chapters throughout Oregon and is proud to be working in close cooperation with other veteran service organizations in Oregon. to ensure that Oregon veterans continue to receive the entitlements which they are due. I have been asked by Roger Robinson, chairman of the United Veterans Groups of Oregon, to also speak on behalf of that organization. The United Veterans Groups of Oregon is a coalition of all state-level veterans organizations within the state of Oregon. Included in this group are the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Paralyzed Veterans of America, the Disabled American Veterans, the American Ex-Prisoners of War, AMVETS, the Air Force Sergeants Association, the Marine Corps League, the Non-Commissioned Officers Association of the United States, the Retired Officers Association, Spanish American War Veterans, the Veterans of World War I, and the Vietnam Veterans of America. I am awed by this responsibility. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would like to make several comments on Senate Bill 710. Again, we thank you for the opportunity to make these remarks and urge you to listen to the collective voices of the veterans of this state. Oregon has a long history of rights and entitlements granted to her veterans. These have been modified through the years to reflect the changing needs of Oregon's veteran population, which now stands at 345,000. I am here this evening to ask that you make additional changes. These changes concern the Veterans Employment Preference Statutes. Passage of Senate Bill 710 will ensure that future generations of Oregon veterans will continue to receive the employment preference that has been granted to previous veterans as a token of appreciation for their service by a grateful state. Senate Bill 710 would make several changes in the current laws relating to veterans and their possible employment by the state of Oregon. These changes would serve to benefit both the veteran and the state. Oregon is presently denying many of her veterans the use of their status as veterans in their efforts to gain a foothold in state employment. Oregon presently excludes all of her retired veterans, as well as any veteran who has been out of the armed forces for 15 years or more, from using their experience to their advantage. The state of Oregon is losing a large segment of valuable potential employees because of this discrimination. Military.
Senator Shoemaker.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I want to understand why there is discrimination. I mean, I understand you're seeking a preference, but you're saying now that without the preference, there is discrimination. Could you explain to me why that is so?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, veterans' preference is an entitlement granted by a grateful state. It is currently being denied on the basis of age in this state. As I said, all retired military personnel are.
Oh, I see. Those veterans who don't get the preference are discriminated against as compared to the other veterans who do get it.
That is correct, Senator.
Thank you.
Military retirees possess a tremendous wealth of experience. Many have served their nation in a variety of leadership and management positions. Many have been decision makers. Their skills have been gained through years of service in virtually every occupational area. Many times their experience includes the performance of their assigned duties under extreme conditions and pressures. They have met the test. Oregon is losing a valuable resource by not attracting these people to state employment. Many other Oregon veterans have successfully worked in the private sector for years following their discharge from service. They already possess valuable training and experience gained at no expense to the state. The state should not handicap itself by excluding some of its most talented job applicants. Rather, it should welcome those who have a proven record of service and who have chosen to serve again. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I wish to speak for a moment about another group of veterans who have found the existing employment preference laws to be discriminatory. This group is our women's veterans. Since the ending of the national draft, women have flocked to our armed forces in order to serve their nation. The percentage of women in the armed forces has doubled during this period. Women are now serving in almost every occupational specialty. They are receiving valuable training and experience for future careers. The most common reason for a female veteran to leave the service is to marry and raise a family. After the children are grown, the female veteran often seeks employment. In Oregon, she is denied her status as a veteran when she applies to the state. The entitlement she has earned by her years of service is now no longer available because of the 15-year cutoff. Senate Bill 710 will correct this injustice. Sadly, other veterans have been excluded from the opportunity to use their veterans' preference in seeking state employment for reasons beyond their control. America was very slow to recognize all of the problems and consequences of the war in Vietnam. Many veterans, including some of those who faced the worst of war, were cast aside by a society that did not wish to take the responsibility for its actions. Vietnam veterans were made the scapegoats for a nation that chose not to remember. Society painted the Vietnam veteran as the drug user, the baby killer, and the loser. These actions did little to encourage those who had served once to serve their state and nation again. Today, many Vietnam veterans are ready to step forward and accept the challenge again. Many would appreciate employment offered by a grateful state, but now, because of the present 15-year cutoff law, they are being denied their earned veterans' employment preference. Mr. Chairman, we feel that the veterans' employment preference is one way for the state to try and pay back, in a small way, part of the cost of service to this nation. Should the veterans' past service be worth any less today to a grateful state or nation? We think not. The 15-year cutoff of veterans' employment preference is discriminatory and should be abolished. Senate Bill 710 also changes the present definitions of disabled veteran. Present law denies the granting of disabled veterans' preference status to many veterans who have sacrificed of themselves in the line of duty. Under the present laws, a veteran who has had his thumb amputated, or has had a shoulder or a knee replaced, or has lost his tongue, lost his penis, or is disfigured with scars to his head, face, or neck, does not qualify as a, quote, disabled veteran. Senate Bill 710 will correct these injustices. Also included in the proposed changes for the definition of disabled veteran is the award of the Purple Heart Medal. The Purple Heart is awarded for wounds received in combat. It is not given for illness. It is not given for accident. It is an honor that this nation bestows upon those who have given their blood in defense of this country. This change in Oregon statutes would also bring Oregon in line with existing federal guidelines. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the veterans of this state feel that these previously mentioned disabilities are no less deserving than those in existing preference statutes. The sacrifices have been made. The entitlements are due. Briefly, I must speak about Section 2 of Senate Bill 710. Under current law, if both a non-veteran and a veteran score 100 points on any civil service test, then the veteran has effectively lost his preference. If a disabled veteran scores either 95 or 100 points, then he has been denied the use of either half or all of his earned preference points. Senate Bill 710 provides for a true veterans preference system in Oregon law by allowing the 5 or 10 point preference to be added to a passing score and by allowing the total test score to be either 105 or 110 for veterans or disabled veterans. This is a small but critical change. No longer will a veteran be discriminated against because of intelligence. Section 4 of Senate Bill 710 would open new doors of opportunities for Oregon veterans. This section deals with those state jobs for which there is no civil service test. These jobs are temporary and or seasonal in nature. These jobs exist in many state agencies, including, but not limited to, the Departments of Fish and Wildlife, Transportation, Forestry, and Revenue. To many veterans, the training and experience offered by these jobs could provide an entry into state employment. This section was added to this bill at the insistence of Oregon's veteran population. It would be another example of the state of Oregon being able to offer a hand and not a handout. Gentlemen, I must confess that unemployment statistics are seemingly a science unto themselves. But in preparing this testimony,